Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week, we'll be talking with the great comic novelist Mark Childress, who has a serious new book, What It Means to Miss New Orleans, Three Essays After Katrina. And we'll check in with Vera Warren Williams and Jennifer Turner of Community Book Center, which is celebrating 30 years in business. What an amazing achievement. Mark Childress is one of America's great comic novelists. He's the author of such favorites as A World Made of Fire, V for Victor, Tender, the very well-known Crazy in Alabama, and two of my favorites, One Mississippi and Georgia Bottoms. It makes me smile every time I think about Georgia Bottoms. Mark is joining us from Key West, where he lives now, but he owned a house in New Orleans from 2002 to 2005, and he's just published an ebook called What It Means to Miss New Orleans, Three Essays After Katrina. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how you doing, Susan?
Great. Glad to have you on The Reading Life.
It's great to be here.
Now, Mark, I know that you love books, the old-fashioned kind, as much as I do. So tell us about this turn to e-books for I Know What It Means.
Well, we've done a little paperback edition, too, but it's mainly selling as an e-book because I wanted to do it just as a fundraising thing. I'm a great admirer of Habitat for Humanity, especially there in New Orleans. And, yeah, it's been so long since the storm, I think a lot of people have forgotten that they're still working. There's still a lot to be done there. So the idea was that I could put together some of the journalism that I did back around the storm and, you know, sell it as a fundraiser, try to get a little money for Habitat.
Well, that's very generous of you. Now, when you imagine the readers for this book, who have you got in mind?
Well, so far, a lot of people have written me that it's people who live in New Orleans, you know, who maybe have felt a little bit forgotten. You know, for about 10 minutes there, Katrina in New Orleans was at the center of national consciousness. And then, you know, as I said in one of the essays here, when Anderson Cooper went home, everybody sort of turned away. And so I'm hearing from a lot of people who love New Orleans or who live there who are interested in looking back at, you know, how different it was right after the storm from what it is now.
Now, describe the essays for us. I remember reading that first one in the New York Times, and it was, I don't know, it was such a spirit lifter.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it was just the very Sunday after the storm, you know, that I guess the flooding happened on Monday, and this was for the Sunday paper. And there had been a lot of talk in Congress that week about whether or not New Orleans should be completely abandoned. And I couldn't believe anybody would even give voice to such an idea. And I was just enraged on my own, and then an editor called me from the Times and said, can you think of some reasons why maybe we need to hang on to New Orleans that you could write about it? So that's why I decided I would do a list. And my idea was it's not really a locals list. It's more like a list of things that tourists may have encountered that they fell in love with when they were there. You know, just things like the oyster loaf at Casamento's or, you know, the piano player Tom McDermott or... I'm trying to think back to everything that was on the list. You know, it was just sort of trying to evoke all those things that don't have anything to do with the port or city level or even the traditional New Orleans tourist attraction. And my hope was that maybe some of those senators and congressmen would read the piece and realize that there was some New Orleans that they loved too and that there was a reason to hang on to it. I was glad that talk sort of went away. I think it wasn't very serious, really.
Right. I love it that you ended with a salute to the sanitation department, too.
Yeah. You know, I guess I had to write the piece on Friday for the Sunday paper, and that was right at the height of the Superdome, with its horrible pictures coming out of the Superdome. And I'm like, where is the sanitation department? They're the best in the world. Get them over there. Government incompetence at every possible level. So, yeah.
Well, if they can shovel us out after Mardi Gras, they can't do anything, I think.
No, they need a little more advance notice, I think.
Now, the second essay, Disaster Tourism, deals with a topic we all reckon with after Katrina, and that was published in Salon, and that was the story of your first trip back, wasn't it?
Yeah. I came in on the day that the mayor opened it up for the first look-see, for people to come in and see the damage to their homes. So that was the first date that there was a scheduled flight that I could take into New Orleans. and I came back just because I had a bunch of friends there, and I have a brother who was there, and just wanted to see what I could do to help, since everybody I knew was in a mess.
And you had had a kind of narrow escape yourself, real estate-wise.
Yeah, I did. I was kind of like the last guy that got off the Titanic in Ireland, you know. But I sold my house down in the Quarter on, I guess, 3 weeks before the storm, which actually, real estate-wise, wasn't that bright because the houses in the Quarter went up after the storm. So I could have made more if I'd kept it. But I didn't get gray hair from living there through the storm, so I was lucky that way.
And then you would have had to write an essay called Disaster Capitalism.
Yeah, exactly. How to turn that back around. But, you know, I did get the lovely experience of carrying out refrigerators. And I remember all the voodoo markings on nasty refrigerators. And that, just that completely surreal world that existed before everybody came back. You know, with the National Guard riding around. And I double parked in the middle of the canal street. And the cop says, "Are you going to just park there?" I said, "Are you going to do anything about it?" He goes, "No." So I don't know. It was just a very weird time to be in that city. And New Orleans funkiness really, really came to the surface. Everybody was supposed to be chasing each other with armed gangs and killing everybody. And it's just none of that was happening.
No, we were all too busy stuffing Vicks VapoRub up our noses.
Yeah,
and moving
exactly.
Out refrigerator.
Stuff out onto the curb. I mean, all those houses that just looked like they had vomited all the stuff up. You know,
yep.
It was just, I'll never forget that.
I'll never forget when the streetlights started to work again, and I didn't realize it, and I ran one, and a cop pulled me over, and he said, "Now, honey, that one's working now." Just, you know.
We're back to obeying the laws again.
I know. I enjoyed the Wild West.
There was a kind of a Wild West moment there that, you know, I guess it's not nice to say that we enjoyed it, but it was kind of remarkable.
Right.
You know, and everybody was so friendly and so nice to each other. They really were. I can't imagine another city coming through with more humor and grace than New Orleans.
Well, that last essay, The Tragic City Laughs, is about that humor and grace, and it speaks to the exuberance of our city, I think, and it's about that first Crew de Vue parade after Katrina.
Yeah, I came back for that and thinking, you know, oh, it's going to be such a downer, and the whole city's torn up, and everything smells bad, and I don't know, it was the greatest Mardi Gras ever. Because people were just so determined they were going to have fun. And nobody had any fun since August, you know. And it was just wonderful. The Crew de Vue was never sharper. The satire was never more pointed than on those floats that night. The Nagin backstroke, I'll never forget. And then somebody had a T-shirt on that said, "FEMA promised me a better T-shirt." It was all kind of great.
So when's the last time you were here? I say home, but I know it's not home for you now.
It feels like home. I was there a couple times last year. I come at least twice or three times a year, dip my toe in again.
And how do you feel about the city's progress when you're here? What are the things you look for?
Well, every time I think, well, the city's looking good and things are coming back together, and then I go out to New Orleans East or St. Bernard or somewhere, you know, even out to Lakeview, and you see that half the houses are still sitting there abandoned. I mean, I can't believe New Orleans East. It's just built tens of thousands of abandoned homes up there. And I guess all those people are somewhere else. But it seemed to me that there was a great possibility that existed for the Obama administration to make sort of a test case out of rebuilding New Orleans, and they missed the chance to do it.
Come on back, darling. We miss you.
I'd love to.
Well, it's been a great pleasure to speak with Mark Childress, whose new book is What It Means to Miss New Orleans. Proceeds from this book go to Habitat for Humanity. Thank you so much, Mark.
Hey, thanks, Susan.
Do you know what it means to miss New Orleans and miss it each night and day? And no, I'm not wrong, the feeling's getting stronger the longer I stay away.
Community Book Center is celebrating a very special anniversary this year, 30 years in business. And here to talk with us about their beloved bookstore is founder Vera Warren Williams and Mama Jennifer Turner, who's been there for 25 years. Now, congratulations, you two. This is an amazing anniversary.
Thank you.
Now, Vera, your life as a bookseller began with this tremendous leap of faith, didn't it?
Yes, it did. In 1983, I was a substitute teacher, and I noticed that the students in the schools were not exposed to books or other educational materials that positively reflected African American life, culture, and heritage. And I began to bring in books from my personal library to share with the students and the teachers alike. And I noticed that it had a profound effect on how they began to see themselves and see their community. And I think it was a big boost in their self-esteem. And afterwards, folks wanted to borrow my books, and I couldn't do that. We know about borrowing books. So I got the idea to start a book service to provide these books to the community as a whole, other than in February during Black History Month, when you could only buy Black books then.
And you started off with $300 of your own money and putting the books in the trunk of your car, didn't you?
Yes, and also in the den of my parents' home in the Lower Ninth Ward. And people would come into the home and shop with us, as well as it was a mobile book service.
And you had grown up with books. Both your parents were educators, right?
My mother and her whole family was educators, and my father was educated, but he was also a laborer.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jennifer, how did you get involved in the bookstore? You've been there a long time.
Yes, I have. My sister had free tickets to the zoo, and it was Black Heritage Festival at the Audubon Zoo. This was their first year. So we loaded up the kids. I said, well, what are they doing? She said, well, I don't know. They just gave us some tickets. She's an educator. So we went out to the zoo, and my sons, you know, they came back and said, Mom, they have people dressed like Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass. I said, really? So I went out there, and there they were all dressed up. And he said, then there's a lady over there selling books like we have. I said, really? And so we went over there, and that's when I met Vera. And from there, you know, I went to her shop on Poland Avenue and purchased some books from her then. And she called me while I was at the library, you know, used to volunteer at the library. And out of the blue, asked if I would come over, because she was working at another job at the time.
So Community Book Center has been at several locations around town. So give us kind of the rundown of the history.
Well, we started, as I said, in the Lower Ninth Ward in my parents' home. Then, as Jennifer mentioned, on Poland Avenue, right there at 1421 Poland Avenue, right off of North Robinson. And from there, we moved in Treme on Ursuline Street. And we stayed in that location for about 7 years until 1996. We moved to the location on North Broad and Bienville, which we stayed there for, I guess, another 6 or 7 years until 2003, when we purchased the building that we're currently in on Bayou Road. And that has been home for 10 years. So in addition to 30 years total in business, we've been at that location for 10 years.
So what are some of the highlights when you look back at these 30 years? You've had some great authors. You've had some amazing readings. You've seen writers come and go. What have been the highlights for you all?
Well, I know for me, some of the highlighted authors were Dr. John Henry Clark, who came and visited with us, a noted African historian. Also Alice Walker and Nikki Giovanni, Sonia Sanchez. We also were honored to have Octavia Butler to do a signing with us, in addition to Malifia Sante and other African-centered historians and educators. So it's been really exciting. And in addition to doing author signings in the store, we also do events outside of the store, and we've done something with Ossie Davis, you know, so it's like Danny Barker,
right?
You know, homegrown. So it's those moments that are really memorable. And in addition to that, just the stories that they shared with us that made everything come alive. And I just had a vision of Chef Austin Leslie.
Oh,
he would
wow.
come in. He was a regular in the book center as well. So he shared all kinds of funny stories with us.
Now, Jennifer, I know they call you Mama because you've mamaed a lot of writers and readers along the way. Don't you find that being a bookseller is partly like being a priest or a shrink or, you know?
The shrink part, yes. When Vera named it Community, looked like the community forgot about the book and made it a community center. Because a lot of our community come in there with different problems or they need things, you know. And as you said, you know, writing books. One time I posted on Facebook, they asked, how can I get my book in here? I said, is it good? Oh, yes, it's good. So I just tell them, you know, you can have a book signing here or something of that nature. But it's been rewarding at times, and at times it's been, why am I in here? You know.
So tell us some of your favorite books, Vera.
Well, I would like to say that in terms of one of my favorite books, also one of the favorite authors that we had, Ayikwe Arma. He's an African writer, and his book 2000 Seasons was one of the most prolific pieces of, I guess you could say, historical fiction that I've read, in addition to The Miseducation of the Negro. And I really liked and was attracted to a lot of the children's books because that's how I started, and I would like to read and absorb all of the information and stuff from the children's books. I also enjoy reading The Road Less Traveled and Who Moved My Cheese, some of the other...
You have to read the business books.
Right, right. And A Gathering of Old Men.
Oh, yeah.
Our very own Ernest Gaines.
What about you, Jennifer? What are some of your favorite books?
Ooh, I would have to say Toni Morrison, Sula. I would have to say Song of Solomon. There's so many. Children's books, Slave Dancer, Paula Fox, Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry. There's so many. I like short stories because you finish them.
Short stories are like the working woman's friend.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
The Boy Who
Painted Christ Black by John Henry Clark.
Mm-hmm.
He also wrote, you know, a lot of fiction, too, that you could kind of say were autobiographical.
I just wanted to add, when she mentioned Sula, I liked The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison, in addition to Meridian by Alice Walker and Jubilee.
Oh, yes.
By Margaret Walker. And we can't forget Their Eyes Were Watching God by Zora Neale Hurston. And when Jennifer mentioned the short stories, my favorite short story writer is J. California Cooper.
Oh,
she has
yes.
side-splitting stories.
Now, you see your mission as more than just selling books at Community Book Center. What is it you think you do that sets your store apart from other stores?
We see Community Book Center as a safe place for the community and folks to gather. And even though we need to be in the business of books, it's not always about selling books. It's about being available and accessible to the people in the community and to, you know, help them sometimes get from one place in their lives to the other. I know immediately after Hurricane Katrina, everybody was like, you got to come back. You got to come back. And it was just a place where people came to just debrief and just get themselves together and then go back into that whole rebuilding mode.
And then bookstores were signs of normalcy, that everything was going to be all right. You know, every time a bookstore opened, everybody in the neighborhood was so happy because it was like one little great good thing had come back, you know. You are celebrating this in a very special way, too, this anniversary. So tell us some of the things you have going on next weekend.
Okay, well, this time we're just coming on home, you know. So mm-hmm. we have people volunteer their time to come in and talk on different issues. We have Denise Graves. She'll be talking about peace talks, dealing with personal, internal, she calls it monkey chatter. And that's on Friday. And also we have Amy Bryan. She'll be having her art displayed in the book center the whole 3 days. And we have a young guitarist, solo guitarist by the name of Jair. He'll be coming in. Probably he likes to play. He's 15 years old. He'll be playing intermittently, you know, after each session or whatever we have. Then on July 6th, we're having from 10 to 12, Dr. Adrienne Dixon will be at Community Book Center, and she's going to facilitate the future of our children in the chartered system. So that's from 10 to 12. And then from 12 to 2, we're going to have Chef D, Donald Smith. He's going to be giving a food demonstration, and it's jambalaya, I believe, chicken and sausage jambalaya. So that's from 12 to 2. And then from 2 to 4, we have our very own Dr. Mona Lisa Saloy. And she's going to be talking about literature and signing her book, Red Beans and Ricely Yours. My favorite one is Word Works.
I love her books.
I love her. Well, yes, folklorist, mm-hmm. educator, everything, you know. Well, Friday, I forgot about the fish fry, a down-home fish fry, you know, sitting down, dancing, talking, and have a fish fry. And then Saturday evening, we're going to have a cool jazz on a hot July night. We're going to have...
And it will be hot.
we're going to have Renard Bozier. He's a jazz guitarist. He's an educator also, and he's going to be performing that night at 7 o'clock at the Book Center.
So that sounds like all the basic elements of community, you know, books mm-hmm. and food and music and all the good things.
All the good things. And then Sunday at 11 o'clock, we're going to have a jazz brunch.
Nice.
And that's with Mario Abney. So we're going to have a jazz brunch.
So Vera, what do you say? You up for another 30 years?
Well, I don't know if I'm ready for another 30 years, but we take one day at a time. I would also like to add that we're waiting on confirmation on a very special guest author who would like to come and celebrate with us, who has been a part of our history for a very long time. So we're looking to have a very, very, very special guest to come on Saturday around 3 o'clock. So stay tuned.
All right. We'll keep our fingers crossed. Well, congratulations on 30 years of great bookselling and just, I think, a lot of love for all the people out there who've been nurtured and sustained by all your great bookselling. So thanks.
And we want to really thank you, Susan, for your support over the years. We would not have been able to make the public aware of the author events and the other book-related activities that we've had over the years had it not been for you and the support that you've given us, and even just in terms of remembering us even when we forget. So we appreciate you, and we celebrate the work that you've done
well. Thank you. We've been talking with two great booksellers, Vera Warren Williams and Jennifer Turner of the Community Book Center. Happy 30th birthday to that landmark store. Thank you so much, Vera.
Thank you, and we're more than a store.
Yes, you are. And thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you, Susan.
It's amazing how often books and love are intertwined in songs. Sarah Vaughan swings with her knowledge of her lover in I Could Write a Book about the way you walk and talk and whisper and look. And what's the end of her book? How to Make Two Lovers of Friends. Very sexy.
If they ask me, I could write a book about the way you walk and talk and whisper and look. I could write a preface on how we met, so the world would never, never, never forget. With the simple secret of the plot, it's just to tell them that I love you a lot. So the world discovers as my book ends how to make two lovers of friends. If they ask me, I could write a book about the way you walk and talk and whisper and look.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. The West Bank Writers Group meets every Tuesday night at 6 at Barnes & Noble West Bank. Of course, Essence Music Festival cranks up this week at the Superdome and the Montreal Convention Center, July 4th through 7th. Some of the authors who'll be in town at the Convention Center include Carol Babel, Congressman John Lewis, Denise Shervington, Dr. Julianne Malveaux, Mickey Taylor, Merle Evers Williams, Niecy Nash, Steve Harvey, and Victoria Rowell, and many, many more. For the full schedule, check out Essence.com. And today's guest, Vera Warren Williams and Jennifer Turner, will be celebrating Home Fest July 5th through 7th at Community Book Center this weekend. Victoria Rowell signs her debut novel, The Young and the Ruthless, Friday, July 5th at 6 at Octavia Books. Peter Wolfe signs My New Orleans Gone Away, a memoir of loss and renewal, July 10th at 6 at Octavia Books. All of July is a month to search for Waldo, the character in the popular Where's Waldo children's book series. It's really for children of all ages. Judith Lafitte started this event last year, and it was such a wild success, it's back again, featuring a hunt for a short Waldo figure through 28 uptown businesses on Chapatoulas, Britannia, Octavia, and Ferret. The theme is Shop Local, Shop Indie, Find Waldo. The month ends with a Waldo party July 31st at Octavia Books and at Garden District Bookshop. And remember, there's still time to enjoy the summer reading programs at all our area libraries. Check them out. STARE, Start the Adventure in Reading, will sponsor summer work days starting July 11th and continuing through August 14th. If you're thinking of becoming a STARE tutor in the fall, take part in one or more of STARE's summer work days to learn more about the program and help prepare the materials for the next school year. Visit starenola.org or check out the Facebook page for more information, or call the STARE office at 899-0820. And coming up, watch for the new exhibit at the Ogden Museum of Southern Art, Saturday, July 13th. From 2 to 4, there will be a gallery walkthrough of Eudora Welty, photographs of the 1930s and 40s, with a panel discussion featuring Welty biographer Suzanne Mars, Eudora Welty Foundation board member Mary Alice White, and Ogden curator of photography Richard McCabe. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. Or you can email us anytime at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening and keep reading.